Stand by for action.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Punk Die Die podcast with me, Tom, and Neil. Say hello, Neil.
Hi, Tom. You went to a gig last night. I went to a gig last night. We're all fucking gigged out.
You know, our last two episodes were just talking about gigs, so let's hold that thought for another time, even though there was some interesting developments, I feel.
Interesting developments there was.
But anyway, punktide977 at Gmail. I'm pretty sure I forgot to give the email address last time we recorded. And punktide Facebook group, where we always have a lot of fun.
And our Instagram and all that jazz, right?
I don't do Instagram, man. I'm pretty much social media'd out, but that's all right. But anyway, but to make a short story long, Neil, we are very thrilled to have one of our very early guests back with us. This has been a long time coming, and you know, I think there's certain milestones as we went along with this podcast, and I would say this individual's appearance was definitely a highlight of our early years, because it was funny as hell, for one, and for two, it delivered us one of our good friends, Jake Pope, also. So, hey, Jake.
Yes.
Yeah, Jake found us because you were on the show, and we've actually become real good friends with him. He's actually even one of our moderators on our podcast. Anyway, I never said who you are yet, Rick. Anyway,
okay.
So we have Rick Sims from the Digits and the Gaza Strippers and local theater legend Rick Sims with us tonight. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing good, man. You know, I'm out there fucking kicking some theater ass.
Are you? Yeah. remind us what you do. You do the music, or do you do the music at the theater, or do you do all kinds of different stuff? I can't remember. It's been so long since we talked to you.
Sound design, composing, you know, just sound designing, basically. Like,
gotcha.
I'll, you know, like I just did Moby Dick down at.
I bet you did. St. Louis. Dirty bitch.
Yeah. Jeez, Neil, give him a little chance to breathe.
Well, they called it Moby Big Dick, you know.
So
go ahead.
What would the music be for Moby Dick? I mean, it was originally a novel, obviously. I mean, is there like a classic score that goes with it, or would you start with a fresh palette?
I started with a fresh palette. I didn't want that boring ass old stuff. It had a little bit of like a Tim Burton vibe to it, you know, sort of like. I don't know, you know, like the kooky waltz and crazy ghosts playing piano.
So you're writing all this music, and will it get reused? I mean, will another theater put it on and use your music, or is this like something that gets used for 2 weeks and then gets sort of like just left to memory?
Most of the time, it just goes away. But it's this Moby Dick has played in several places, so it just depends. You never know.
I bet you I know how it went, Neil. I bet you it went right?
Nope. No, that's the shit I got to fight against.
Weren't you tempted?
Absolutely not. You know, I have standards.
Hey, never mind the music. How the fuck do they put Moby Dick on the stage?
There was a lot of craziness about that, you know, because we were doing it, and they had these three women that were fates, and they'd walk around and they would play different ghosts and people, and then they would come together and be Moby Dick. And I was like, well, that's lame, guys. What are we going to do? So basically we ended up like creating a fake emergency in the theater. Like the lights went out and the smoke alarms went on. And then this big giant sheet came out over the audience, and it was like, wah! So
Wow. Yeah, they had to be there. Moby Dick's like a big like float, like a big parade float almost. Like just rolling on there, Neil.
You can't recreate Moby Dick.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Man, I couldn't make it through that book, man. That book is so fucking long.
Jeez. I do remember reading it in school.
Well, better man than me.
I bet you it isn't that long, Neil. It just seemed like it because you were a kid.
It's pretty fucking long. It's pretty long. It's pretty dull. Yeah.
It's long and fucking boring. Yep. But, you know, all you had to do was listen to Captain Ahab, and, you know, that's all you needed, and you got the whole
story. There you story. Go. Perfect. There you go. Sum it up, right? Yep.
Yeah, it's Captain Ahab.
Bringing it back. Bringing it around, bro. So,
he's a professional over here.
Shit. So it's funny. I was asking Neil, because so when we had you on before, it was the early days. We
Episode 17, like, everybody. Yeah, February 2020.
We were kind of clearing out our Rolodexes and, like, inviting our friends to come on to try to kind of build an audience. And, man, we talked extensively about, like, the olden days and Mattoon and Champagne and Chicago and the Gaza Strippers and the Digits and all that stuff. It was really an exhaustive conversation. But I believe at the time you were already working on this record that's coming out for Record Store Day. Am I right about that? Like, 4 years? Is this thing 4 or 5 years
ago? Oh, my God. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't remember, but it has been a journey. That's fucking sure. Mm. You know, we had to hunt down people like my cousin Mike and my old bass player from 1983, and that took like 6 months. Mm. And then we had to get all these old tapes baked and figure out who's going to do this or that with them. Then I had to go over to Steve's house, and that took another 6 months. Everything takes 6 months. So it was quite the journey.
Then you went to Jerry's house, did a little acid.
Then we went to Jerry's, we had to trip on acid.
Watched him kill one of his wives.
Yeah, and...
Well, I'm out of this one. I don't know this conversation.
Well, you better. If you're a Digits fan, you have to understand this.
Tell me, Neil. Tell me about Jerry. Or Rick, tell me about Jerry.
Jerry, you know, Jerry Lee, man. It was a song.
It's a song. Like, okay, really good.
Yeah. Watched him kill one of his wives.
You're going too deep for me, man. You're going too deep. I have become quite acquainted with the catalog since we had Rick on, because I didn't really know the Digits before that. But the problem is I lost my Spotify premium, so those sons of bitches kind of like strangle it down to like 20 songs.
Yeah,
so I know Captain Ahab, and I know some of the songs. I mean, just because I won't shell out 10 bucks a month, I would shell out the 10 bucks a month if I thought it was going to go to the artists, but I know it's not, so I'm just taking it for free.
Yeah, it's going to some billionaire, man. Some billionaire to build a rocket to go to space and fucking space. I don't know what the hell they do up there.
You should build a submarine and go down and see the Titanic and blow up.
Jesus. Or implode. Yeah. There's a lot of fucking anger on this show tonight.
Yeah, I'm sick of it.
Well, when Rick gets his $1.17 check, he can thank me. When he gets his $1.17 check every quarter from all those streaming royalties, big Spotify streaming royalties.
I guess page after page after page of 0.001 cent of royalties from those guys. Page after fucking page after page.
When it's all said and done, do you get it quarterly, or how often do you get that?
Yeah, quarterly.
When it's done, do you have enough to A, take your wife out to dinner, B, go buy a pack of smokes, or C, the check isn't even worth cashing?
No, it's not worth cashing if it's from Spotify only, but I got other streams, bro.
Okay.
I got some flow coming in from the spring, I call them, the offspring.
Well, okay, so let's talk about that. So, people that didn't listen to episode 17, and if you didn't, then more fool you, because you should go back, because that's one of our classic episodes. Yes. But the Digits, obviously, killer songs, killer albums, and the Offspring decided, yeah, we like the Digits too, and they put one of the Digits songs on what turned out to be the biggest fucking album that sold like 10 million copies. And so Mr. Sims was sitting on the easy street there, right, buddy boy?
Yeah, man, I went out and bought me some bling. Is that what they call it? The kids call it? I got some bling.
Those damn grills.
And teeth. Yeah. I got divorced and got went overseas. No.
So now his ex-wife owns half of Killboy Powerhead also.
He has a boat called Killboy Powerhead.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, luckily, me and the first wife, we parted ways amicably. And there was no, she didn't get, yeah. So I don't know. So how did that whole thing happen? Yeah, I got a guy. I think I told you about this on the last episode, right? We had this. He had this guy from California, my friend Chris. And he was in Clawhammer. If you ever heard of Clawhammer, you should check those guys out. They did a whole album of Devo covers, by the way. I think they actually did a whole album of they redid the album "Duty Now for the Not Duty Now for the Future." Are We Not Men?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first
album. And anyway, one of the guitar player from that band, we had played some, and he was like, he was with Offspring. They went to the studio, and he was there with them at the studio, and they were like, "Oh, we should do a cover. We should put a cover on the thing." And he was like, "You should cover the Digits, man." And he listened to the song in the car. Apparently, they were driving somewhere. And he was like, "Oh my God, that dude's voice is in my range."
Yeah, and, see, it sounds their version is not very different than yours at all, honestly.
Yeah, well, you know, it was weird. They didn't do the guitar solos. I have a lot of critical stuff I can bring up about it, but I won't because
because you got those checks for all those years.
Brought in a lot of motherfucking money.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, you know, it's like, okay, thanks guys for doing that. I appreciate it. And, you know, it was awesome. But they didn't play the guitar solo. I think they cut it kind of short. I forget, whatever. But anyway, Chris got that going and I did it. We did it. They did it. And,
Epitaph
paid me a lot of money.
You're still getting checks from that?
Yeah, well, I get checks from BMI and Epitaph still.
Wow.
For that. Now I get going out for a nice dinner check.
Well, it happened at the right time though, because right now a band could do that song, it could become a viral sensation and get streamed a billion times, and you'd get probably less than, you know. So it was the right time, you know. It was a good time to have a hit record.
I know. I've thought about that. You know, I don't even understand music nowadays as far as streaming and all that shit goes. I'm trying, but I sort of don't care. It just seems like whatever you do now is just going to, everybody's just going to get it for free. So why bother?
Do you ever get the inkling to play rock and roll anymore? You must, right?
Oh no, I do a lot. You know, I play a lot. I got.
Oh, you still do? Oh, you do play?
Okay. I did a whole CD that Neil hates.
Is it prog rock?
You'd love it, Tom. It's metal. It sounds like AC/DC.
Is it? Nice.
Oh my God, you're so full of shit.
I do that just to grind his gears. Tell us what it was called, buddy boy.
So yeah, it's fucking, you know, so I do it. When the pandemic came, was the pandemic happening in 2020?
No, it was just about this. When we interviewed you in Feb 2020, it blew up like a month later.
Yeah, 2 months.
Yeah. So, you know, I was like, all of my theater stuff just went away. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do with my life? And so I was like, maybe I need to get online and start doing stuff for movies and blah, 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 blah. So what I tried that for a while and I realized, well, what I can do is best is sell punk rock songs. So I was selling, you know, it turned out that I was selling punk rock songs on Fiverr, and people were like, oh my God, love it. Mm. And this guy wanted me to do a whole record. We spent a whole year doing an entire record under a pseudonym of Bloody Horror Punks, because that's what he wanted to call it. He wanted to make a band of his own. And, you know, at first it was like, oh, I'm just going to throw some stuff together. I just make some money because it's the pandemic and I needed some income and blah, blah, blah. And then it comes to like he's wanted something every month. And so it was like a whole year of making this whole new record. And I started getting into it a little bit more. And it was sort of fun, but I still listen to that record. And it's like I'm listening to a totally different person or another band, and I actually enjoy it.
AC/DC, so, yeah, is what you're listening to. It's good.
Yeah, even though Neil hates it because he has shitty taste in music.
But the Digits always had like a big rock and roll sensibility within their punk rock context, Neil.
Oh yeah, you
thanks
know,
for telling me about the Digits, everybody.
Well, no, I'm just saying. If you didn't hear it, it's because you were being intentionally obtuse. That's all. I'm
me,
saying.
Moi,
yes,
no.
Yeah, that Neil be a, who me potentially obtuse? Neil never. All right,
drunk for 5 years. That's all.
All right, why don't we play a song and see if we can get this thing back on track? Well, whatever on track means.
I tell you what, Mr. Sims, I want to throw a fucking curveball at you. You're talking up Bloody Horror Punks. Why don't we play a song and let the audience be the judge?
Okay, because if anybody comes at me hard, I'm gonna fucking be pissed.
Except for me. Which one should we play, my friend?
Oh, I sent you Mr. Mr. Chainsaw. I don't know if you want to do that.
See, you didn't tell me who that was by. I wasn't
You'll love
sure.
the song when he didn't know who was by. Yeah. Now he knows who was by. He doesn't like it anymore.
That was Bloody Horror Punks, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the most, it's you know, more punk rock than the other ones, maybe a little bit. So maybe,
that's
you know,
like
it sounds a little less like AC/DC, wherever you got pulled that out of your ass.
I mean, the business and AC/DC are like 2 degrees separated, you know? I mean, they really are.
Hey, Tom, stop sucking up to the guest.
No, I'm just saying. It's. I mean,
that's how I learned how to play guitar, putting my Angus Young records on and going...
Well, I mean, yeah, and it's got to be the Bon Scott era stuff, obviously. But, I mean, like, there's not that much difference between Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap could have been a great, like, Oi song.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
But, all right. So let's check it out, Neil. I'll be the judge. I'll be the arbiter between you two.
All right. So what's it called again? Mr. Chainsaw or something, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Bloody Horror Punks, Mr. Chainsaw. Ladies and gentlemen, believe it or not, that was not AC/DC. That was Bloody Horror Punks with with
Mr. Is this something? Chainsaw. Is this something you could buy? Is this thing streaming? I gotta listen to this. Is
yeah,
this...
you just. I think it's on like CD Now or.
Oh yes, the hottest distro. Like the hottest distro there is.
The guy that put it together had no idea what to do, but he made actual physical CDs too. So.
Well, the funny thing is, it's not on Discogs. Like, everything in the world is on Discogs, but this thing is not. At least I can't find it on Discogs, unless I'm spelling it wrong.
Make an entry for it, Neil.
Is it P-U-N-X?
Yeah.
Yeah, not on there. Weird,
or right? Spotify.
Damn.
Yeah.
That upsets me, because it's epic.
Epic!
As you can tell by that last song.
Everybody... So, hold on a second. So...
Holding...
Is that something you're still doing, or was that over and done? Are you done with that whole thing now?
Oh, well, that's done. He wanted me to do another record, and I just haven't got around to actually talking to him about it. And you know, if I do another record, though, it's going to be more fucking weird. This no. was like he just wanted something done, straight punk.
This is
whatever
this is,
that means.
This is really weird, Tom. So you know how I even heard of this for the first time? Mm. Remember when we went to Liars Club to see Channel 3?
Yes.
And Mark came down from Milwaukee.
Yep.
And he brought that strange little friend with him.
Yep.
His little friend was the one that told me about, oh, Rick Sims has this new band. They're called Bloody Horror Punks.
His little friend is really connected. Like, he's friends with Channel 3. He knows a lot of people. I don't remember can't remember his name, but...
Yeah. Maybe he knows Rick.
Chris, I think it was.
He seemed very excited about you putting out a new record, whoever this little Milwaukee dude was.
He should have been. Yeah, when you say little, do you mean like he's an actual dwarf or short?
He's probably an inch shorter than Neil. He's just trying to make himself feel like a
big man. I'm an inch shorter, and Neil's going, oh, yeah, I'm going to cuck on this guy. Like, shorty-ass motherfucker.
You know, occasionally we actually will... Occasionally, we actually will get an email complaint about our constantly picking on people's appearance. But you know, when you're basically Greek gods like Neil and I, it's not hard to make fun of others. You know,
you can't tell about Tom because you can only see the top of his head right now. He looks like an egg.
Top of my bald head. Yeah, exactly.
You got some killer drapes going on there too, bro. I know.
Lordy.
So let's
you know, there's a blur option if you ever want to. Think about the blur option.
Yeah,
for
Tom,
you.
Do that.
Well, the other thing too that Neil noticed is like if I'm deep in thought, I close my eyes. I'm not falling asleep. I close my eyes sometimes, and
yes.
So don't be offended if I'm closing my eyes.
He wishes he was somewhere else.
You'll know if I'm sleeping because I snore like a chainsaw. So.
Oh really? Hey,
Mr. Chainsaw.
Yeah.
See that. Wait,
this whole show is getting better already.
See. Yeah, we're professional.
This is almost as good as Men in Blazers. Eh?
I don't like that show, man. I just
What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
What in the fuck is wrong with you, Neil?
Well, you know what?
You don't like Bloody Horror Punks. You don't like Men in Blazers, two of the greatest things in the face of the earth.
Nah, I don't want to hear Yanks talking about soccer. Thank you very much.
Well, he's got an English accent.
Yeah, I know. This is another thing Tom doesn't know anything about over there. Look. He's going to close his eyes again.
Soccer?
Yeah.
I know that 5 million people worldwide can't be wrong, but they're still wrong. All right.
Bring it back on board, Tom. Come on.
Okay. So, all right. Rick, let's talk about a little something called Dynomite. Actually, I don't think it's Dynomite as much as Dynamite. The new double LP.
Strictly Dynamite.
We'll be coming off a Record Store Day. This is so exciting, Neil. This is the first time we've actually known anybody who had a Record Store Day release, right?
I think so. I mean, you know.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But, like I said, it's been a long time in the works. And the first album, let's talk about the first album first. It's always interesting to me, like, when a punk rock band does, like, a greatest hits album. Because essentially what you're talking about at that point is... fan favorites, right, or something. So how do you go about picking out your greatest hits, as it were, for that first album? What was the process like?
Well, we knew that we had some ones that had to go on right off the bat. Me and my buddy Dave Landis, he's not just a buddy, he's a freaking he's an executive producer on the record, and he created all the artwork, helped me not just help me and him together created this whole fucking thing.
Gotcha.
And there were, as soon as we started talking, it was like, oh, obviously this song has to go on, obviously this one has to go on. So after we got past the like 7 or 10 songs, it got down to like I think this one, really, I don't know about this one, I don't know. So we started crowdsourcing, quote unquote. Gotcha. I put some shit on Facebook and
that's me. God, it's just because I did Bloody Horror Punks.
You fucking. That's because you fucking would have been like.
Yeah, you got all the original albums, though. What do you think?
Or something like that. Oh, the one from Mad Toon and the Candy. What do you mean you're not going to put the one from Mad Toon on?
Look. How do you like that?
Yeah.
How do you like them apples, Seth?
Is that an original?
Yeah, fuck yeah, it's original. Why, you think I'm getting fucking bootleg Digits t-shirts?
Chinese knockoff. Bought it from some guy's pants out front of the show.
I got a few of those in the basement if you want one, Tom, but I don't, you know. I feel sorry for you. You know, he's like, oh, Neil's got a digit shirt and I don't have one.
You guys were just a, you're just a hair. Well, no, when was the last digit show? Like, what, 92 or something? Or was it late 80s? When did you guys?
2000.
Well, no, I don't mean your last. Okay, maybe not the last show, but when did you guys kind of originally quit playing?
94.
Oh, 94. Okay, I was 21. I wasn't that young.
You probably played Grand Rapids. That was a crazy show because we played the Double Door and the bass player didn't show up.
Mm.
That being Doug Evans. Did not show up, and there was a bunch of people there to see us, and a buddy of mine and his band Pegboy. I think Pegboy opened. Pegboy opened? Mm. I can't remember. But the Pierre Kedzie,
good old Pierre.
Yep.
No longer R.I.P.
He played bass.
Oh, he did for you. Oh, for well, yeah. I never knew that. How about that?
Yeah, he played bass for us that night, and it was like for like four or five songs because that's all he could pull off. You know, it's like he doesn't know our stuff. He's just kind of winging it and doing a great job. Don't get me wrong. It was awesome playing with him. He was one of my heroes. Poor R.I.P. Rest in peace. And that was the night of the I smashed somebody over the head with a bottle. They were getting on stage. They were trying to get on the microphone. And he was like, hey, yay, digits, digits, digits. And they jump on the stage. Oh, woo, digits, my, yeah. So I took his bottle off the top of my amp, and I smashed him over the head with it. And blood went everywhere, and people were pissed. People were like, okay, now this has gone too far. And I had to bring him back out and go, look, It was a fake bottle.
Oh, there you go. I remember the story now.
It was fake blood.
Yeah.
Because whenever we did shit in Chicago or Champaign or locally, we always had some big ruse. And this friend of mine, his name's Joey Slotnick. He's in the newest, actually, Coen Brothers movie. He came up and did a lot of stuff and he didn't move the head. And I still got, the other day, I got somebody who was like, on Facebook was like, yeah, that time I got really upset when he hit him over the head with the bottle. Thank God he brought him back out and showed us it was a joke because I was really disgusted. So people were actually really wanting to like kick my ass. And so luckily,
what is wrong with people, Neil? I'm sorry, I got to take just a 2 minute segue here. I hate to waste Rick's time, but I was at a show last night and somebody went down, and it was unclear whether they were having a seizure or they. Maybe OD'd. We're not exactly sure what happened.
You went through their pockets.
But all I see is people online the next day, how traumatized they are.
Oh, Jesus
fucking and how they Christ. Need to support each other and all this. And I'm like, I'll tell you what, man. If you called in sick because some stranger passed out at a punk rock show last night, even if they died, you're not my kind of person, man. We're not in the same generation. I don't know what you are, but... Anyway, yeah, I hate to see older people. So you're talking about a 50-something-year-old person, Rick, and they're just being an idiot at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, they didn't grow up in, I mean, when skanking was really happening back in the day, man. I remember we played a fucking Gangrene concert in California, San Francisco. Maybe I told you this.
No, I don't remember
story.
This nope.
No, last one. Anyway, them motherfuckers were skanking around in a big circle. I don't know if you're old enough to either sure. of you guys to ever remember. It was a big thing. People would...
I mean, Neil's as old as you are.
You know who you're talking to, right? I saw you many times, my friend.
Fugazi built a brand on not having these people around. And it was these hardcore, you know, douchebags going around in a circle. And they would go by people, and they would... As they'd go by people that were... It was a whole middle circle, and there was a whole crowd around them. And as they go by people, they would kick backwards really quick, and they would, like, catch people in... chin or kick women and stuff, you know, and everyone's like,
that's where the fight starts.
So yeah, that was so fucking annoying. And then they were doing this once, and they kept going around in a big circle, and Gangrene was playing, and then someone got out of the way real quick, and one of the dudes that was kicking backwards apparently broke his leg, and they had to like stop the concert. Good. And bring in an ambulance and tow this like hardcore skanky guy out of the
I think that was actually his name. That was his name.
That was that Reggie show, Neil. That was that Reggie show where the guy got knocked out cold by my Southside buddy. Just knocked him out cold. Well,
that's what you fucking get. That's what you expect.
Bring the stretcher in.
Yeah.
Bring the stretcher in and carry him out. It does kind of kill the buzz.
Fuck these things.
When you
got to
have somebody come out on a stretcher.
No, it's all good. That's what you
want. Yeah, you know, we saw that stuff. It was like people would come and do that stuff when we played. I'm like, man, it's like kind of weird that you're skanking us, bro, because we weren't like that at all. We weren't hardcore. I mean, we had to live through all these iterations. We'd go play shows and we'd show up and there'd be a fucking like 5-band bill and everybody before us was like, you know, nothing like us at all. And we'd come on stage and people'd be like, what? Because we were like, you know, more like you said, more like rock and roll.
And Rick, you're wearing like your suit.
He's wearing a suit and a feather boa. You know,
that was
the rest of the bands. There was not one sleeve among all 10 guys. There was not one sleeve, and you're just wearing a suit.
Yeah, and you know, people, I can't skank to this. What's going on? And you know, so it was like every time we get there, we'd always piss those people off, and we hated those people, and not hated. That's a strong word these days. I don't want to get into
it's
that.
It's fine. I think our audience can handle you hating them. It's fine.
Yes, I think that's good.
All right, listen, Neil. Why don't we play a song that you can skank to? Rick, what's a song that you chose today that we can skank to?
Adolescent Hormones. This is one of the rarities on Strictly Dynamite. Actually, we have two. There's two records inside of this collection.
Yeah, we'll get to the second record. We ain't through the first record yet, but this is from the second one, huh?
This is from the second one, and it's called Adolescent Hormones.
No, I'm just breaking your balls. We'll come back
and
we'll
talk about this. You can totally skank to this one, bro.
So is this Digits, or is this like a pre-Digits band?
It's Digits. I can't say it's not Digits because it is Digits, but it is also a pre-Digits.
Sounds confusing. Yeah, I guess we'll have to double back on that.
Was it on one of the cassettes?
We recorded this, we recorded this, I think, must have been like 1982 or 1983, in the chicken shed. We didn't really know how to record, and we sort of set up and tried to do it as best we could, and that's what this is, and yeah.
Let's see if we can skank to it, Neil.
Yes, I'm already doing it in the bedroom.
I got my elbows thrown out wide. I got my Doc Martens on. I'm ready to roll.
And your eyes closed, yes. Digits, Adolescent Hormones.
Myself in the hospital to die, I think I'd have a lot better chance of surviving.
All right, everybody. So the only place you can pick that up is going to be on the new double album, which comes out Record Store Day. Yes. Is it really limited to 1,500? Is that true, what I'm reading on this flyer right here?
Yeah, well, even less than that after you get a bunch of... Well, you know, I shouldn't say that because I really don't know if they bought more. I know they're sending out a bunch of copies to people that were in the band or gave us free pictures or blah, blah, blah. So I know there's 1,500 total, but I don't know if there's going to be 1,500 for sale.
So is this a limited color? Is it like a colored thing?
Yeah.
Green, it says.
Okay, see.
Is it green?
What they love to do in situations like this, they'll do 1,500 green ones for Record Store Day, and then they'll probably do like a second black press that you could order from the label or whatever. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
That's the old canard.
Yeah.
That's the way they always did it.
Yeah.
Did it back in the day.
So, okay, so your first LP, like I said, great. How many songs are on the first LP, like the hits part of it?
Well, it's a lot. I can't remember. You know, if I knew you were asking these questions, I would have fucking...
Do you actually have a copy of it yet, Rick? Or not?
I do, but I didn't open it. I got it today.
Oh, good. I'll come around to your house and pick that up if you don't mind. Thank you very much.
I got it off the porch because of people like you.
Neil, you're a cheap bastard. Go pay your $34.95 like everybody else.
So the funny thing is, we had like three Evanston people today. So I live in Evanston, Rick lives in Evanston, and who were we just talking about before? Somebody else lives in Evanston. Oh, yeah, what's his name? The old bass player from Pierre. Pierre lives in Evanston, or did, obviously. Lots of Evanston love right here.
Yeah, well, and Big Black and Steve Albini, and that's where it all started as far as like that whole punk thing. I think they went to Northwestern and...
Yeah,
I used to record here. We used to record down by, I don't know, just downtown there by Lemoy's Hardware. There was a recording studio, and they recorded that really big black stuff there. So it's kind of it's kind of a mecca of rock and roll. It's.
I always thought that big black stuff was like 4-track because he was a drum machine. I always thought he just kind of recorded it himself.
No, well, yeah.
Later.
No. I mean. It was called Roland. Oh, yeah. The Roland thing was, you know, definitely not a drum. It was a drum machine, so it was kind of, you know, like playing with Fisher-Price toys, I guess. But anyway, they actually went to a recording studio and actually made the whole thing. So, okay. It does have a much more storied rock and roll history. Punk rock, let me say that. Punk rock history then. One might think being
say Joliet or some other crappy suburb.
Joliet, another Fine Digits song, which I assume is on this album, Strictly Dynamite, the best of the digits, comes out April 20th.
You should make sure before you let them know.
Well, I would imagine it is.
You know, I don't even remember what track listing is on that goddamn thing. Anyway, let's assume that song is on there, and you go ahead and play it for your silly podcast.
Actually, I wasn't going to play that one. Sorry. I didn't have that one picked out. Okay, so get this. I asked Laura which digit song she'd like, and she said Under the Christmas Fish.
Yeah, on the record.
And I said, I want to play Top Fuel. Is that on the record?
Oh, I think so.
Neil's going
to
do the...
Man, I'm going to have to go downstairs, and I was saving my unboxing of the package for this unboxing video.
We don't want to see your package, buddy.
Don't do it. Let me see if Touch & Go's got it up or something.
They don't. Touch & Go's website looks like it hasn't been touched since 1992. It is maybe the worst website I have ever fucking seen.
You heard it here first, kids. Yes. Touch & Go website, unacceptable.
And we're hoping to get them on the show sometime, so maybe they won't come on now.
They do good work.
Touch & Go?
Yeah.
I can set you up with Corey. Look. Here, track listing.
What a gentleman he is.
I'm boycotting Corey until they reissue the Necros albums. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'd be glad to have him. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that Necros album, one of those is worth a lot of money, so.
It is.
Yeah, you can't get it from, they can't get it for less than a couple $100.
Yeah, at least. But.
You're right. I can't find it, Neil. I can't find it.
I can't find it either.
Talk about yourselves.
I do have something from Rory Smith.
Who the hell's that?
He's the a Premier League writer for the New York Times.
Jesus. We care about that. What's the matter with you? Mr. You theater guys, listen to you.
Pretentious theater guys.
And what was the third digit song you think I picked, Rick? Something from the first album.
The one you picked was probably Mighty Sailor Man.
The one that's going to get you canceled.
No!
Is that on the record?
I'm guessing the Fix Some Food Bitch is not on the record.
Fix Some Food Bitch is on the record, the live version.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. Now we all know, right? I'm afraid, do I have to really explain this? But maybe I do.
About what?
That, you know, a lot of this stuff we do was parody. A lot of stuff was talked about in the third person.
Now, Rick really hates women, and I think he might have killed his first wife.
I never in my life asked a woman to fix my food and called her bitch in the process. So,
No one that listens to our show is going to care. I can guarantee it.
Back in the day.
Yes.
It's so funny. I mean, it's not funny. I grew up, put it this way, I grew up in a town that there were actual people that talked to their women like that. And I think that was, you know, a lot of times when, you know, I'd sing like, hey, fix some food, bitch. And people would be like, I don't know if they understood that I was telling a story. A lot of that stuff I got, like that vibe I got from Big Black and stuff, you know, like he didn't talk about, he was going to light a kerosene or blah, 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 blah. Right. He would bring up these whole stories, and I took a lot of that idea. And I don't know if I had Big Black in my canon of knowledge back in when I
did. You know, 10% of the people probably liked it for the wrong reason. What are you going to do? It happens. You know, comedians say that too.
It was downstate Illinois. Of course they did.
There you go.
They fucking loved it.
But no, it's funny, you know, I'm about 10 years behind you guys, but, you know, I wrote songs too that back in the day that, like, they were, now would be considered so offensive, but I was just trying to be funny. But yeah, nobody should be forced to stand by everything they said when they were 22 years old, you know?
Well, I have to forgive myself.
There you go. I forgive you.
But seriously, though, I mean, it's like, I wouldn't make that song today. I wouldn't. I wouldn't, because I think the only reason I wouldn't make it is because it would be, I think it would be misunderstood that it was coming from a third person point of view, or I don't know if it's a third person point of view. I was playing a character. I was actually, the guy singing the song was the character who lived in Decatur, who was misogynist dickhead. Sure. And actually said those things.
People just don't, I don't know if people don't have a sense of humor now, or are unable to. People are, once again, I go back to being intentionally obtuse. People are intentionally obtuse about some of this stuff sometimes, I think.
I think stupid is, they don't have any sense of humor.
Everybody's just trying to figure it out because, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Trump comes along and he's like hating on immigrants and women and, you know, raping women and nothing's happened, you know.
Wow.
And everybody was like, fuck this.
This went in a weird direction from me just saying I was the place, fix some food, bitch.
Yeah. That's what Donald actually says to Melania every night. He's like, fix me some food, bitch. That's just how he is.
No, he just goes to McDonald's.
Huh? Just how he gets a Whopper.
Gets a Whopper.
Goes to that surviving Burger King in Mattoon.
Well, I'll tell you what, we are going to play the song and see if our listeners can figure it out that this is what.
So is this going to be the live version from the new record? This is going to be the original version.
This is going to be the original version from the first album, Fizz Job, correct, Rick?
Yes. It's actually from Whoop My Head, actually. It was the first
cassette release.
Yes, but this is the Fizz Job version, I'm assuming you're playing.
Fizz Job, yes, indeed. The classic first album, which I was in the room when you unboxed it in, I think it was Lars's bedroom, or maybe it was Don Gerard's bedroom or something,
unboxing was even a thing, huh?
Yeah, it was, and then I got into, you know what, you'll like this, I got into an argument with that same day with Lars about if Stiff for Little Fingers were better than AC/DC. And guess,
oh, really?
And guess which side I was on.
She was on the, or he was on the AC/DC side. Huh?
He was, and I was on the Stiff Little Fingers side, obviously. But
anyway. You know, I love Stiff Little Fingers, and their two best records are better than the two best AC/DC records. Ooh. But if you count up, the total good songs by AC/DC and the total good songs by Stiff Little Fingers, I suspect AC/DC might win that contest.
That's because they put out 5,000 albums.
Yeah, they each have one good song.
There you go. Okay, so let's listen to the song. Digits, Fix Some Food, Bitch, from Fizz Job. It's a fun song, wasn't it? No one's getting upset by that. Jesus Christ, it's all good stuff.
I just want to apologize.
Oh, for fuck. No, please don't. Please don't.
The problem is, most of us really, in our lives, we don't really want subservient women, so we have women in our lives that if we said that to them, they would just kick us in the sack and just be like, fix your own dinner, dumbass.
Yeah, but the next line is, where's my TV guide? No, when will those migs fly, right? Whatever.
I mean, it's basically like Archie, it's like an Archie Bunker type character, right?
Exactly. That's when I think of Archie Bunker, I think of Rick Sims. That's exactly what I think of.
Sitting in his house listening to Back in Black.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, so okay. Listen, the greatest hits after the album. I don't feel like I got a resolution on that, but that's okay because let's talk about this other album because this is so. Anybody who was a big Digits fan has all the stuff on the first album, probably. My friend Neil here, but where this thing is going to appeal to the diehard collector, the former bass player of Mick Wilson and other such hardcore record collectors is the second album, which is made up of, I don't know, you tell me, Rick, I don't know.
It's called, that record's called Bring Me the Head of Jaco Pastorius. And okay, it
who's
is,
Jaco Pastorius? Is this an 80s thing? Am I missing this?
You have to look it up, bro. I can't lead you by the hand.
Oh, jeez.
I know who Oscar Pastorius is.
Jaco. All right,
he's an awful jazz bass player.
Oh.
And
wow, he's got a headband, like the hippie hair. Been dead since 87. Did not live a long life.
Anyway, you can see why we want somebody to bring us ahead of Jaco Pastorius. No, this music was recorded. This is like almost like a central Illinois kind of like a, what do you call it? A
celebration.
What's that saying? Yeah, well, a celebration, but a collection of like Central Illinois punk rock. It was all those tracks were recorded in like in Mattoon or in the Chicken Shed or at Galen Swango's house. Or I'm trying to think. Oh, there was one that was recorded in Champaign with Mark Rubel, R.I.P. He just passed away. And yeah, so all of these are like, it's like a little, I'm trying to think of the fucking word, a little look into what the punk rock that we were doing at the time. One band was UXB, and that was me and Doug. I played bass. I'm sorry. I played the fucking drums, and Doug played guitar. Mm. And we were really into the Plasmatics at the time, so there's a little bit of Plasmatics influence. And the other stuff was like Digits Before the Digits, like early stuff before kind of where it all started in the Chicken Shed, which I don't know what the hell. But as you can tell by Adolescent Hormones, it was a weird ass situation.
Is it mostly previously unreleased? Because Neil was saying he had a bunch of tapes and stuff that weren't really. Is this stuff that it has never been on vinyl for the most part?
Oh, yes. I don't think any of it's been on vinyl. See My Scar was a cut from Whoop My Head, I believe. So that has been, quote-unquote, released.
But like a different version.
Yeah, of me making tapes at home on a 4-track and then sending them out to Maximum Rock and Roll. I think we advertised in Maximum Rock and Roll. People would send me like $5 and I'd quickly make them a tape on a cassette and put it in the mail and from my house in Mattoon. And we
still
did
pays,
like
three, still pays better than Spotify, Neil. Still pay better than Spotify.
It does. An ad in Maximum Rock and Roll plays better than Spotify.
No shit. The money I got from Record Swap, because I think we went there and put them on commission. I think we like, hey, will you sell these? They like put them in their little case at the front.
That's where I bought mine. I bought my Signifies My Goatee from Record Swap from Charlie.
Oh, well, see? And I made more money doing that than I ever did on Spotify. But yeah, it's kind of weird that, not weird, but cool, definitely cool that it's like Charlie Goatee is like selling my thing that I recorded in the Chicken Shed or at Galen Swango's house. And and why, you know, he's because I didn't have to like pass any like cool porter. Oh, maybe I did. Maybe he was like, oh, this is really pretty decent. I got to do it. But it's talk about DIY. Jesus Christ.
So you don't even know how many of these things are floating around and all, there's all different things floating around. So you have, man, it's like a collector's nightmare.
Yeah. And none of those tapes you could even play in a cassette player these days. They just crumble. But a lot of those songs that were on those tapes, they ended up on being re-recorded, like Pet Funeral. A lot of the stuff on Fizz Job was re-recorded for from those tapes, or from a couple of those tapes anyway. A lot of them weren't, because they were freaking silly and awful. I think our first one, Durga Durga Durga, I think it had one side that had some really weird new wave stuff on it or something.
Is that the one that had Groovy Clouds on it?
What, did it have Groovy Clouds on it?
I don't remember. I remember that being on one of your tapes. I don't remember which one it was.
Yeah.
How many tapes were there? Were there 4 tapes?
Let me see. Durga Durga Durga, Whoop My Head, Signifies My Goatee, and was there another one? I think that was it.
Just 3 tapes, okay.
Yeah, you can see the progression of us in a band as a band through that whole thing. But like, yeah, from definitely. Clouds all to like I don't know what songs are on Goatee now, but like See My Scar, you know, all this that stuff. But you can also see that it's a weird progression. I mean, we didn't know what we were fucking doing. We were just like, you know, hey, let's make music and of stuff we like, and what do we kind of like to listen to? You know, we love the Sex Pistols, we love the B-52s, we love the Clash, we loved all the stuff that was very mainstream punk rock back then, because that's all we got in Central Illinois. And that's, but I swear to God, none of that, even though we heard all that stuff, none of that stuff was emulated in our music. I don't know what the hell we were doing back then, making this music like Groovy Clouds or Adolescent Hormones. Was it punk rock? Sort of, but kind of not, you know, and it was like...
It's like, that's always the most original stuff, right? Like, when you're just, like, trying to figure it out. Because, like, once you learn to play all the Sex Pistols riffs, then you can make songs that sound like the Sex Pistols. But when you're just trying to figure it out yourself, you're making this weird thing where you're, like, stealing a little bit of the riff, but it's usually highly original, even if it's not good, because it's just kids screwing around.
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to do, is, like, I want this to be totally original, something that people have never heard that's going to blow their minds. And after a while, it was just like, you know, dude, why don't you just shut up and put some decent chords together?
Write a couple of decent songs. Yeah, how about a melody here and there? Yeah.
And I don't know. It was, you know, we got into that vibe after a while where it was like, I don't know. We just, I had these crazy, like, thoughts or visions of, like, okay, I want to update the energy and, mayhem of like Little Richard and
a lot of
Jerry Lee Lewis.
I'll tell you what, mate, that's the beauty of the early digits, is that you had your AC/DC stuff. I'm not joking now, but the AC/DC stuff, you also had the early rock and roll stuff. So Jerry Lee or Little Richard or whatever it was.
You could almost picture him standing on the piano seat.
Yeah, and then you had the punk rock thing mixed in. So that's what the digits were like. They were like a combination of all those three things.
You're almost like punk rock by default, because where else would they stick you?
Yeah.
Well, you know, no doubt. It was like throw it all together in a blender and try to, you know, and that's our guidepost to rock and roll. And as you know, Neil, to have a show that was like a little out of control, Jesus Christ, everybody stand back from what the hell is going on, and then cause a, you know, just chaos is the word. Chaos is the guidepost to what we're doing. But it was also a little bit, I don't know, packaged as well. It was like, I don't know if it was pretend. It wasn't really pretend chaos after a while. God help us all. But
it's a little bit planned. Like, you planned it a little bit.
Well, there was definitely a persona that was inhabited by me that was kind of like rock and roll star guy. And
cross with Ric Flair.
And it was also a way for me to, I don't know, just show disgust with... with the whole damn world and where we were at, and also it's like, what is with this hero worship crap? Why are you clapping for me? You people need to shut up.
Because they were good songs.
So you're like, right? You guys were great. You like had contempt.
He was a wrestling heel. That's obviously exactly what he was like. He was a wrestling heel. Yeah.
Yeah. So before we started, Neil, I mentioned that I just learned that a song that I thought was a Digits original song was a cover. Because you guys did a lot of covers, but it was never necessarily anything obvious. There was a couple that were, but, you know, for the most part, you'd pick some weird stuff. But it was the Plasmatics song, Monkey Suit.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Which you, it's funny, because you said the Plasmatics were an early influence, and I just didn't know. Did you know that, Neil?
I did not. I thought you were going to say they did it like a, well, obviously they did a Hendrix cover. They did a fucking MC5 cover, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Which album was that off of?
Which one? Monkey Suit?
Yeah.
I think that was on Case or Haunt. That was on Case or Haunts or Haunt. Damn, I need to go back like through my records and like.
It's on the Plasmatics album, the one, 1984 one. The title has 1984 in it. I can't remember which. I'm not a huge Plasmatics person. I actually like Rick's singing quite a bit better than Wendy O. Williams, not to be disgraceful to the late Wendy O. Williams. Because I'm kind of a fan.
That is the one Digits album I don't actually have on vinyl. Is that
Oh my god, dude, you're not a real fan.
Well, yeah, you know, that actually leads me to another question, Rick, is this, so you got this best of thing coming out. Is this gonna lead to a wider reissue of the vinyl stuff, do you think, or is this already in the plans? Do you have any idea? Are you in the dark?
I don't think it's going to be. You know, vinyl isn't that much in demand, and if you want a vinyl record of the Digits, you can probably find it. with
go to Matt your basement. Go to your basement.
Yes, for one.
I want like an original tape where you just like write me a few songs and just.
No,
like back in the old days.
He's going to answer the old ad in Maximum Rock and Roll exactly. And send you $5.
Oh, no, I got another one of these. He's like Ringo Starr answering that Beatles fan mail. He's like, oh no, I got another one.
I just did the Bloody Horror Punks if you're looking for something new. And don't listen to Neil. Check it out.
No, I will check it out.
At least it's kind of fun. If you don't like it, I don't want to hear about it. Because
yeah, apparently he's fucking very thin skinned over here. Jesus, bloody punks. God,
you know, I got accused of sounding like Bon Scott, which I think is a compliment. And so I'm like, what the fuck? No, but I don't, they're not going to reissue those. This is it. This is it.
You want
eight pick. This is it. This is the Swan Song of Swan Song.
It's actually only 1,100 copies.
1,100? Wow!
Like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they do like another run later. But I am going to. I mean, usually I go to record store day, but I don't set my alarm. Am I going to set my damn alarm this year? It's a tragedy.
Well, you know, I'm going to be at Sugar Records. I'm going to be signing them. So if you want me to,
wait. Oh, you're doing Sugar? So
you're doing Sugar downtown?
Yeah.
I thought you were doing it.
Do they have more than one location?
They do. They have more than one location these days. Yeah.
I believe this is the Wicker Park location.
Okay.
Unless you call that downtown.
On record.
So are you doing that, and then you're jumping in your car and driving to Green Bay, or how's that going to go?
Yep, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm putting in a really hard shift that day.
A blue-collar day. I'm dying to check out that record store in Green Bay, but also Green Bay is a long ways away, and I don't know that I'll ever get back up there, but that UFO museum, that's going to be cool. I'm sure Norm will be there. It'll be cool. Time Bomb Tom. It's a whole
Green Bay
thing, you know? It's a whole Green Bay thing.
Yeah. Tom is worth the trip alone. He is. He used to books up there. That's how I met Wesley Willis. I think it was anyway. If he opened for us or something one time, I can't remember. But anyway, Tom's, you know, a huge fan and has always been a huge supporter. And he's like, I don't know. He just wants punk rock all the time. He's like constantly doing it one way or the other. And I haven't seen him in a long time, so I don't want to pigeonhole him as just a punk rock guy. But he sure as fuck, as far as like bands like us and touring bands, small touring bands, he really supports them. And that sounded like fun. I'm really looking forward to going up there and
That'd be cool.
Sign him some records with my boogers.
So we're pretty friendly with Paul from Boris the Sprinkler, and he told us one time, Rick, he gave me the ultimate compliment for you guys. He said, whenever we played with the Digits, we always had to bring our A game because we knew that they were gonna bring their A game. So
hey Tom, can you move the camera down a little bit? We can't even see your head anymore.
I'll tell you what.
All we're seeing is the curtains.
I'll tell you what, Neil. I'm gonna let you catch up.
Curtains are lit, bro.
Because I am either going to go choke my dog to death or I'm going to choke my daughter to death because I hear my dog down there barking her full freaking head off. So I'm going to let you guys catch up for a minute, but I'll be back.
All right. Sounds good.
Sorry,
So how did... there he goes. How did you get hooked up with the guys from Sugar? And I ask that because that is such... I mean, I don't know if you've been to that record store before. I assume you have. But it's such a weird fucking record store.
We just put out a blast. The record company was just like, I'm going to put this out. I'm going to set up a little PR. April at Touch and Go just said, put out something. It was like, hey, if you want to do something if you want Rick to do something for Record Store Day, just let me know and yada, yada, yada. And they just responded. It was very, I don't think that they're like big Digits fans. I mean, you know, or anything like that. I mean, they could be, but
So you've never been in there, I assume, because what it is, every time you go in there, and I go in there fairly often because it's not Milwaukee Stretch, there's Reckless, and there's a whole bunch of cool stuff down that street, but Sugar, every time you go in there, it's like weird ambient fucking trance kind of music. It's just enough to put you... it makes me want to leave immediately, so certainly the Digits isn't the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Sugar, for God's sakes. Like, now, Bucket of Blood, something like that would have been a good one, because they're all big AC/DC fans too, and, you know, you'd fit right in there.
Yeah, well,
I kid because I care.
They, yeah, and you know, It's funny because when you mention that, it reminds me of the record swap days. You know, we go there and we go in and we'd be hearing Charlie's playing something that's like, what the hell is this? It certainly sort of doesn't sound like punk rock. I mean, and then, you know, the owner is playing goddamn reggae. Yeah. And so, you know, you can't judge a book, I guess, by its... to judge a record store exactly by going in what you hear. It could be some, like, stupid kid thinking he's being all, like, you know, edgy by, oh, this will really throw everybody off. I love this.
Yeah, it's got that. It really does. It really does have that vibe. It's got that, like, late 20s, early 30s, I'm in college and I'm so cool vibe. And I fucking hate it. I had something very intelligent to say then. Now I've forgotten what the fuck it was. That's great.
I wonder what if the... Maybe I should spin Fix Some Food Bitch. I wonder what would happen if I spin fix Some Food Bitch for a record store day there.
That would be good. I would like that. Now, let's hope it doesn't turn out to be like Spinal Tap and you're there going to sign records and there's fucking nobody at the counter. We just...
Oh, I fully expect that. Well, I mean...
I'm going to come down and support you now that I know you're going to be down there.
It's going to be a successful... It's going to be great then.
I'll wear my Digit shirt and everything. There you go. We can see Tom's face. Holy shit. Look at... Damn. There you go. Yeah, I'll come down. Now I know you can do that. Yeah,
bring your wife.
Will do.
You're still married, right?
Yeah, we were divorced for a while, but now we're back together, yeah.
What kind of crazy shit is going on?
Right? Yeah. Yeah, things that happen, right? But yeah, we'll come down and we'll visit, even though it's so fucking weird because we live probably like 5 minutes away from each other. Whereabouts in Evanston, are you?
North so do you need a ride? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah. You know what? I can remember. Yeah, you'll like this.
Neil's got a new car. Let him drive.
I can remember, again, one of these crazy driving stories with the Digits. I can remember with Rick, when we were at the Shitty Guy house, driving to the video store to pick up a copy of the Ruttles, All You Need Is Love, or whatever that Ruttles album was. Movie, I mean.
It's funny.
And you were listening to Little Richard in the car, and we drove to the video store and got a six-pack somewhere and got the Ruttles movie and came back and watched it.
Drank the whole six-pack in the car.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And listened to some fucking Little Richard. It was awesome. Yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
Those were the days.
Yes. Those were... Gosh, when I think back to that, you know, it's just like... Boy, oh boy, did we do a lot of drinking and
other things.
Hard living, yes.
Yeah,
hard living. I don't even know. Weren't you straight edge back then, though? Are you still straight edge? Or
no. No, God, no. No. I had a shaved head, but no, I was not straight edge by any means, no.
The good news about me having to let the dog out is I had time to grab another beer. So. Yeah,
that's good.
Yay.
Yeah. And the first time I met you, you were putting up, and this was fucking early, man. You were putting up flyers, and I think that was probably the same time as you on Green Street, and it was probably the same time as you were taking in the Goatee cassette to sell at Record Swap. And I think you told me you were playing a show at Mabel's, and I should come along. That was when you were pleasant to people, and weren't being.
Well, I can't believe I was pleasant. Well, I probably felt intimidated by your unpleasantness, so I felt like I needed
it. So did you go, Neil? Did you go to Mabel's?
I did. Yeah, I saw
the rest, and the rest is history.
I saw the Digits many times. Blown away. Yeah,
did you have a fanzine and did you write like a scathing review?
No, we loved you guys. You know that. You know that. It was the whole crew. You know, fucking Monkey
it's
Duster.
It's funny when I think about
Randy.
You know, like you and Randy and all those people coming, and I'm like, how many people? Like, how many people were at that damn show? Not very damn many at first, and then after a while, we were like just. Mabel's. Right. It was like huge.
That first Mabel's show was like the Ramones playing the Roundhouse. Every person at this show went on to form a band, and that band was Mick Wilson.
Fuck you. Hey, talking about Mick Wilson though, since the last time we talked in 2020, I actually went down to a show anyway down in Champaign. It was the first time I'd been to Champaign in fucking decades.
Was that Mabel's, right?
No, the show was at... do you remember that country bar that was in, like, downtown Champaign, the Rose Bowl Tavern? No, downtown Urbana?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and he went down there, and they met up with Don Gerard, and it was the first time I'd seen him in decades, but he was super cool. Hung out with him for 2 days. Yeah.
He's a fucking mayor.
Well, he was, yeah.
Champagne.
It was weird being around with him because, like, everybody fucking knows him. He was getting free drinks everywhere. It was actually pretty cool. But that was that. Yeah, so this album comes out Record Store Day, April 20th. And if you like what you hear tonight... Actually, I'm going to play another song. I'm going to play Top Fuel. This was off your fourth album, I believe, right? Your fourth studio album?
Full Nelson Reilly.
Full Nelson Reilly, yeah. From 1991. Does that sound right?
Somewhere. Oh, yeah. That's about... No, 92. That'd be 92, because Corn Pinata was 91, I believe.
Okay. Well, there you go. So, yeah. Let's listen to Top Fuel, because apart from everything else, Rick and, you know, being Central Illinois boys, they also love their dragsters and shit like that. So, yeah, Top Fuel by the Digits. Taking a trip back to 1992, Top Fuel by the Digits, which is probably about the last time I saw you guys. I saw you guys at Cubby Bear, I think, playing with Elvis Hitler, I believe.
What?
Yeah. Does that sound right?
I remember that.
You don't remember that?
I remember playing with Jesus Lizard and Urge Overkill at the Cubby Bear, which is a crazy-ass fucking show, but Elvis Hitler I do not remember.
There would be no other reason that I would have gone to see Elvis Hitler at the Cubby Bear other than you guys.
I mean, other than the fact that they're a great band.
Yeah. But, and I remember, what was his name? Who was the guy that played keyboards with Wilco for a while? They used to live with us. Shitty guy house.
Oh, Leroy?
Leroy. Leroy got punched in the face by one of the bouncers and there was a big kerfuffle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The bouncers at Cubby Bear.
How would you punch somebody like Leroy in the face? He barely talks.
Because he was out of his mind on drugs, and he was got lippy with one of the bouncers, I think, and they just... Yeah, it was a whole thing. Yeah.
Oh, that's happened to me before. That's happened to me before in Boston. Well, my first tour. We played The Rat.
Rat Skelter.
Very famous. Yeah, famous old Boston venue.
Yeah, I think it was like our first tour. And anyway, they had a, you know, the guy named, what was his name? I can't remember, but he had didn't have a trachea, or he had to talk through this thing you put up to your neck.
Oh,
you go, the old cancer kazoo.
Talk like that. And so I went to the, you know, we play there, and I'm like, okay, where's my free drinks and stuff? I went to the bartender. I said, yeah, I'm in the band. I'm supposed to get, you know, he's like, the band gets so much free drinks. And he goes, I go up to the guy behind the bartender behind the bar, yeah, obviously. And I go to the bartender and said, hey, the band gets free drinks. Can I have my free drink now? And he goes, what? And I said, can I get my free drink now? The band is, I'm supposed to get a free drink. He's like, under his breath, the band don't get shit. And I said, look, I can't hear you. Can you say that again? And he goes, yeah, the band will get shit. And I go, oh, yeah, I just wanted to verify that you're a fucking asshole. And he pushed me across the fucking bar, and we always got in a fucking fist fight. And then I was like, okay, I had to go back outside to the guy again. And he had this thing up to his neck, and he was like, I said, Mitch, I think his name was Mitch. I said, Mitch, what the fuck's going on? I asked for my free drink, and this guy was a dick. And don't we get free drinks, right? And he was like, yes, the band gets three drinks. So I went back, and Mitch had to tell him. And the dude had to eat total fucking crow and hand me free drinks. And I was like, yeah, bitch, check it out.
Bet you never watered down.
I watched that fucker pour every second. I wasn't going to trust his ass.
Did Mitch at any point like smoke a cigarette through his neck hole? Did you ever see that?
I don't know, but
very attractive.
Probably. I'm going to guess yes, if I had to guess. If I was a betting man.
Mitch, still alive, doing well, 92 years old. Still hanging in there.
Yes.
I will live forever.
Owns a small chain of Applebee's restaurants in England.
Secret to a long life is to smoke all the time.
Pall Mall non-filters.
And why not? All right, so Digits, we've covered that. So your other bands, obviously, were Guys Are Strippers, and what other bands? Yeah, you did that last time you came on. You told us all about the crazy stuff you did with Fred Schneider and the B-52s.
Oh, yeah.
You did that whole tour with them and helped them record that album. What other bands have you been associated with over the years before they get tired of your ass?
I know, but I'll wait for him.
Well, I was in Super Suckers for like a hot second.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yep.
But that was weird.
Yeah.
And I think they all ended up hating me. Except Eddie. I don't know. Anyway, it all fell apart because I was replacing a guy, and they were all like brothers, and it was like this guy coming in, and I wasn't, you know, it was a time when I wasn't drinking anymore, and I had decided to get my shit together, and their shit was decidedly not together. They were still living the crazy rock and roll lifestyle, and I was on a bus with them, and you know, they're getting high and drunk, and I'm persnickety, I guess, you know, I don't know. It was just uncomfortable, and but the music we made was fun. It was cool because at that time I got to go down. Sub Pop was pouring a bunch of money into the band, so they were flying us all over, and they were flying me out to Seattle to play and to practice. I go out there and practice, and we play a gig, and you know, or pay for the tickets, and they sent us to Austin to record the record, and Paul Leary, the guy from Butthole Surfers, produced it. And we played a little bit with Willie Nelson while we were there, and we met him, and we went to see Junior Brown for $10 on a Monday night, which was really probably the best thing about it.
Junior Brown, so great.
Yeah, he's amazing.
You were on the Sacrilicious album? Is that am I right about that? Or was it, which is their biggest selling album to date?
There you go.
Yeah, and I think
that was back when records sold. Of course, it's not really fair to compare it today when records sold sell. But yeah, that was their high watermark.
Yeah, I think they did. You know, they pumped a bunch of money into that. Sub Pop did, hoping that they would, you know, kind of break out a little bit. And they did a couple of MTV videos.
Yeah.
I remember I did an MTV video with Linda Blair.
Oh.
And
did you bang her?
No, I wanted to. No, I didn't want to. I take that.
They reenacted the crucifix masturbation scene, Neil.
Good Lord.
At a cheap hotel room.
Along with Cancer Kazoo guy.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's a threesome nobody's paying to see.
Hey, Rick, man, I want to...
I find you physically attractive.
My name is Mitch. I would like to have sex with you, Linda.
Was that the Born with the Tail video?
Yes. We drove around in the back of fucking trucks and shit. It was 120 degrees.
I gotta watch that again. I remember that back in the day.
They had some video producer that was like all the rage at the time.
They probably spent like $100,000 or something to shoot it.
Absolutely. They spent a shitload of money because, you know, that was the time when it was like when Nirvana was taking off. And so all of a sudden they're like
all these alternative rock bands are. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's bazillionaires at Sub Pop now, and so they were just decided to empty their pockets a bit on the Super Suckers.
You know, it's funny.
All for naught.
It's funny because Eddie is still out there slogging it away on the road. We're going to see him later this year.
They're playing Evanston sometime soon, Rick. They're playing Space at Evanston.
They fill up our little tiny 150-person venue here, so those guys are slogging it out on the road, making a living. But just as a rock and roll band, but Sub Pop tried so hard to make them part of like the grunge thing, but they were always just a rock and roll band, you know. It just didn't really.
Yeah, they were not of that ilk.
Didn't work.
No, that was never their vibe. That was never their style. It was kind of like Digits on Touch and Go in a way, in that we did not sound like experimental or as abstract as some of the. Bands on that we didn't sound anything like Butthole Surfers,
yeah,
or Big Black,
or Mudhoney, or yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Touch and Go, yeah, or Negative Approach,
yeah, or what was I trying to think? Anyway,
Jesus, sounds
like the usual fare.
Well, yeah. Naked Reagan was on them. Was on their sub label back in the day, right? Quarter Stick. Wasn't Quarter Stick a Touch and Go subsidiary?
No, Pegboy was on. Oh, yeah, Quarter Stick was there was a rift between the owners. They were married and they had this split or something. Mm. And so Corey wanted to make his own label that was free of any having to deal with his wife, who he was estranged with. And a band called Pegboy was on that label.
Yep.
Great friend.
You keep saying a band called Pegboy, like nobody knows who Pegboy
is. We know Pegboy.
Jesus.
Well, I forget how old you fuckers are.
Yeah.
That had John Haggerty, who's my fucking hero, guitar hero. Yep. And, you know, so there was definitely a Naked Reagan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Connection.
It's funny, Pegboy will always sort of have a special place in our heart because, and kind of not in the right way either, because even though I love the band, that Strong Reaction is one of my, I mean, that's like a top 50 record for me, I love that, but during the pandemic, they were trying to do these outdoor shows, so we went to a drive-in rock concert.
Yep. Down on the south side.
Neil ended up getting us some free tickets from a record store, which is cool, but it was my buddy Scott, who I always go to shows with, and Neil. And Neil got really ripped on margaritas the night before, so he's basically like a sick dog all day. So like he's sitting in the car with like his head out the window, and you were allowed to get out of your car to watch the band. It was at like this soccer stadium parking lot. You were allowed to get out of your car to watch the band, but you had to like stay in your parking spot. And at one point when Pegboy came on, because it was cool, it was Jake Burns did an acoustic set, and then the Boll Weevils played, and then Pegboy came on and people like ventured out of their cars, and they were still like social distancing. I mean, there's talking about maybe a couple hundred people in this huge parking lot, and they still threatened, like, sorry, we gotta shut down the show if you guys don't go back and stand in your box by your car. It was just so maddening. And we're like, if this is the future,
rock.
If this is the future punk rock, we're retired. Luckily, it didn't last very long. But it was, so that was the Peg Boy show. It was their 30th, I think it might have been the 30th anniversary of the Strong Reaction album or something. I'm
something
not sure,
like that, yeah, yeah.
It was cool. I mean, yeah, so anyway.
Yeah.
So they have a, like I said, they're in the Punk Till I Die lore.
Yeah, the greatest, one of the greatest benefits of knowing those guys was that Joe, the drummer, turned me on to an awesome plumber. I called him.
That is helpful.
He's a plumbing inspector now.
Oh,
apparently.
Works for the city. He's just like taking bribes, just mad bribes.
Well, of course, Pierre was a plumber too.
Yeah. Yeah. And he pointed me to somebody that was really awesome.
Yeah, I bet you if you're a plumber in Chicago, you make killer dough.
Oh, yeah, they make good money.
Hell yeah. There's all kinds of shitty plumbing that needs to be fixed.
Literally.
Yeah. Shitty and plumbing. The great thing about it is like, oh, thank God this guy did this, come over and did this great job. He was, you know, really had his shit together, and he didn't charge me like some ridiculous amount. And I was like, Joe, I got to... Man, thank you so much, dude. I'm going to have to send you a bottle of whiskey or something to pay you for that. He's like, no, you can't do that, because then apparently he could get like in trouble because he's an inspector and would be seen taking a bribe and stuff. And he was just like, no, that's all right. So I was like, dang. But that was one of the benefits of knowing the Peg Boy.
There you go.
Dude, that shows you just how fucking working class shit is in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's so psyched because one of them guy was a plumber. Yeah, I'll turn him on to a plumber.
Have you guys ever seen this meme? It's one of my favorite modern memes. Obviously, we live in a world of memes. Like, I think the only value the internet really has to me is memes to make me laugh, to lift my spirits. But one of the ones that makes me laugh is, I'm afraid that pornography is really warping the generation and giving them a false impression of how quick you can get a plumber to show up at your house. And I'm like, you know what? That pretty much sums up the modern world, doesn't it?
Yeah. Except people don't watch porn. Well, I guess they watch porn on the internet, but they don't watch porn movies anymore like we used to, right?
Yeah, I really miss the plots. I really miss the plots.
Yes, in fact, I think Rick might be making soundtracks for porn movies these days. I think that's one of his gigs currently. Oh, did he freeze again?
No,
he's there.
Oh, there he is. He froze for a second there, buddy.
He's kind of got like a radiance, like the lights shining in behind him. He's sort of like,
he's fucking
got like a halo effect.
Superstar. Obviously, so we talked about some of your other bands, but these days, well, for the last probably 20 years, right, you've been doing this theater thing. How did you get involved in that in the first place? A crazy maniac like you, how did you get involved in doing...
Well, I said you quit drinking, so I assume that helped.
Well, I got... to go back to the very genesis of my whole theater career, it happened because... every time we played a show in Chicago, this hot young lady would show up.
Really?
And always talk my head off about how great we were, how great the band was, and all this blah, 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 blah.
She's like, Rick, every time. I really love your show. I really love your style.
And.
Sorry, that's not true.
Yeah, she was in a wheelchair. No. And, so I ended up. Like, she ended up asking me to do it. She was in the theater company, and she ended up asking me to do a benefit for the theater company where people show up and they buy tickets to, which then benefits the theater company so they can put on a play. And so I did that, and I ended up spending the night. She gave me a place to stay that night.
Mm-hmm. I bet she did. Jesus. Good Lord. That's a yes.
And anyway, that's my wife now. So,
oh, sorry about the voice thing. All of a sudden, we hear from the background, Rick, are you about done in there? For fuck's sake.
Are you telling? That's so sweet. You're telling that story.
Oh, Lordy, Lordy. Kansas Zoo. Okay.
So anyway, that's how I ended up, you know, banging this broad. No, I end up
one of the great love stories of the 21st century.
I ended up having a relationship with her, and we in the meantime, I was kind of like having a relationship with her, kind of getting together, kind of like, I don't know what you call it, And
this was like the end of the Gaza Strippers, or was this?
No, this was the end of the Digits.
Oh, the end of the Digits. Like, okay.
Yeah, we started hanging out in 1991.
Okay.
And so then anyway, they're a theater company to play. Looking Glass Theater Company. I don't know if you know that. I probably don't, but they're a huge theater company from Chicago. Yeah. And so I did some music for them at the theater building when they did a show down there, and that was directed by David Schwimmer. You know, I mean, it had all these
that chinless prick from Friends.
Yeah,
I think that's how he goes by, chinless prick. I think he's got that on his business card.
And
he's probably a great guy. He's probably a great guy.
Well, yes, he is a great guy.
Rick was going to say no there. That was going to be a no, but he thought about it.
I was going to say something that I shouldn't. I indulge some sort of thing. He was very generous and very kind. That's and cool. Did us a big favor at one. He did Heidi a big favor at one point. So I know he's a great guy because he really helped us out. But I did that show. It was called West. It was about West is a show about this gang in the West End of London, and they did a bunch of stuff. So it was the beginning of Looking Glass Theater Company. Then I did Up Against It, which was did I tell you about the Up Against It last time I was on the show? Anyway, Up Against It was a script that was given to the Beatles for them to do by a playwright called Joe Orton.
They, I know what Joe Orton, yeah.
And they turned it down. They were like, I'm sorry, we don't want to do it. And he goes on, that's a bummer. He goes on vacation. And I think it was like Morocco or something with his lover. And in the meantime, I was on vacation. The Beatles were like, okay, we've changed our mind. I think we should do this. We really want to do this. But he gets murdered. So he gets murdered in Africa. And so they can't do it. And he comes back. So the script wasn't even available for the longest time. And then we ended up doing that script and making a bunch of like Beatles music, and it was a really cool, fun script. So we did that, and that was at the Goodman
Studios. Fancy. Yeah, it's a big one. Yeah.
And but you know, I've done all kinds of theater stuff. So we made a bunch. We actually have a tape of that. We did The Vanishing Twin, which was I should have sent you a Vanishing Twin track. That would have been good to listen to because it's really rock and roll. It's like anyway, maybe I'll send the track of that later. But that was all about me. I played this character that was a Siamese twin at birth. But me and my Siamese twin got split at birth, and I supposedly died. But I wasn't dead because I was roaming the backgrounds of this hall and killing people in the meantime. And it was supposed to be made a bunch of music that sounded like, I don't know, glam rock or whatever. Anyway, so that's then after all that bullshit, then I got kids, and after I got kids, I was like, well, I can't be a punk rock in a band fan anymore. So I was like, okay, I'm going to print up business cards. I'm in theater. Look at me. I'm a theater guy. So hire me because I've done this show and that show and that show. And yeah. Self-made man.
That Joe Orton thing is very sad because he actually got bludgeoned to death, wasn't it, by his girlfriend or something?
I think it was his boyfriend.
Oh, boyfriend. There you go. He beat him to death with a claw hammer, I believe. Coming back to the claw hammer thing.
Well,
what track does that lead us to, Neil?
Actually, it doesn't. It doesn't lead us to anything. But, okay, so you picked a song. I mean, we can swap in this other song if you want, as long as you can send it to me. That will be good. But the one you picked was something called Home on the Range. What was this from?
Oh, yeah, that's from a show I did last spring. Well, a show that I did on Broadway last spring.
Oh, listen to you on Broadway.
Yeah.
Are you traveling to New York for that, or do you just do it from home, or do you go to New York? And
yeah, I went to the opening. I didn't have to go out there to I could do the song remote, and I just had the kids record there. There's kids singing it, and I had the kids record their vocals on just their phones and sing along with it because, you know, it's like punk rock. Doesn't have to be.
Wow.
It can be sort of crappy if we wanted
to. Come a long way from setting up microphones in the chicken shack, haven't we?
Well, you'd think, but I don't know if singing into your phone is.
Yeah, is that really progress?
It's like the modern version of that, I guess, yes. Yeah.
But during the modern pandemic, version though, of
City Recording.
You hear all these bands that recorded their whole albums on their iPhones. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's true.
Wow, that's a little weird. Because
what is it, what was this show about? The way, Home on the Range.
It was called The Thanksgiving Play.
Okay.
And The Thanksgiving Play is by Larissa Fasthorse. She's the first person to American Indian indigenous person.
You're fine.
It's Larissa Fasthorse.
It's all good.
Boy, that sounds like
everybody
who
listens to this goddamn podcast is a fucking Neanderthal, apparently, because I can,
they
I can,
are.
I can
they
just
are.
Say anything.
They're just like me. But, yes. You'll be fine.
And she's made this thing called Thanksgiving Play, where this you can look it up online, but it ends up that these kids are rebelling against Thanksgiving because it's, you know, they killed the Indians, and the way the Thanksgiving hasn't got anything to do with that, the myth of Thanksgiving. There was no kindness to Indians, blah, 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 or to the indigenous people whatsoever. So this way, they do a punk rock song that's very, a bunch of activism, like, I'm not your mascot, and blah, 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 you know, and they make this, and that's what's in the play. But the play's only got four adults in it, but they, made a video of the kids that were students that were put together this video for this Thanksgiving play, and it all goes to shit.
Did you write the song?
Yes.
Interesting.
Well, the lyrics are the original. I mean, that's obviously the classic Home on the Range thing, but with different music, right?
Well, it's, yeah, but a punk rock version of Home on the Range. But at the ending goes into I'm Not Your Mascot, so it's a totally different composition after a while. It's a very, well, it's like punk rock Home on the Range. It starts, you can't tell it, but you can hear it for yourself. It starts out just like punk rock, and then it goes into Home on the Range, and then it comes out again just crazy punk rock that is, you can't really, that's original.
Let's be the judges, Neil. Let's see.
Let's give it a
spin. It sounds like something that Blind Adam in the Federal League might cover.
Oh, fuck off with that shit. All right.
I don't even know who it is, but I'm glad it made Neil upset.
Yeah.
<All
right.
laughs> That's kind of my job. I'm a poking the bear.
Pokey the bear. All right, Home on the Range from some Broadway show about Indians. Okay. Yeah.
Let's listen. Indigenous people.
Of course. One of Rick's Broadway show tunes, Home on the Range there.
Show tunes.
Yes, he's a bit light in the loafers these days, but what can you do?
He's fabulous.
Yes, he's very fabulous. That's our boy.
Yeah. That fucking track blew your mind. You didn't even know what to think of that, even though you haven't heard it yet.
I remember last time when we had you on, you were kind of going through some of the like famous people that you'd sort of inadvertently... like come across due to some of your weird gigs. And wasn't it Yoko Ono that you hung out with? Was it Yoko Ono you hung out with, Rick?
Was it the skid? I think. Oh, yeah. Wasn't that the kid, I believe, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, Sean Lennon.
Sean Lennon, yeah.
That was the greatest rock and roll night of my life. And that was when I went to me and Fred. I probably said this on like last podcast, so I,
that's right. It was so long ago. We all listeners are old; they've all forgotten. Also,
so me. This is when I was playing with Fred Schneider, and we were getting ready to go on a tour of festivals in Europe. So we had to practice, and we were in Chicago practicing. And Sean Lennon's band—I forget what are they called, Cibo Motto or something, Cibo Motto.
Oh, that's him? I didn't know that. Okay.
No idea.
And they came to town, and they were playing the Metro, and Fred knew Sean. It was like, hey.
Oh, was he in Chicago? It happened. Okay.
Yeah. And they were like, hey, come on, Fred, you should come to, let's get some dinner. Okay, cool, let's get some dinner. So we were like, oh, we're going to go have dinner with Sean Lennon. I was like, whoa, that's weird. So I show up, and lo and behold, his mom's tagging along. So there I am, having dinner, having tapas at Cafe America.
One of my favorite places in Chicago. We used to be, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we had a bunch of nice food and sit and talked and chatted and fucking listened to Sean Lennon yap incessantly.
Shut your fucking mouth.
Do people recognize Yoko, or is it just like, who is this old Asian woman?
You know, that's a good question, because nobody...
Does she have an aura?
Think it's kind of like the clientele was very, you know, that's a good question. I don't know, because there wasn't any people coming up to the table like, hey, can I get your autograph anything like that. So I think it was pretty low key or pretty under the table. But
that, it's just typical Chicago people trying to act even more jaded than they actually are.
Yeah. Or maybe people are still upset that she broke up the Beatles, so they were like,
I mean, I am
giving the silent treatment.
Well, it's funny. Like, what would the theater equivalent of that would be? Would have to be like you hung out with Liza Minnelli, right? That would have to be the theater equivalent. I'd say.
No, the theater equivalent would have to be like if I hung out with. God, I don't know if there is a theater equivalent.
It's got to be Liza Minnelli. It's got to be
Aleister Crowley.
Mr. Crowley, yeah,
or the dude, Harry Potter.
The little guy there, Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, no. So I think.
What about the one who played Cheetah Chrome, the ginger?
Yeah, the ginger bastard. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So that it was funny, you know, because I was like, oh. Thank you for the dinner. She was just like, you're welcome. And that's as far as I went. I didn't want to talk about anything. What I wanted to ask her, you know, would be like, so stupid. So, what was it like hanging out with John Lennon?
Did he beat you like he did his first wife?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Or how about, you know what? My question would be much worse than that. It would be, you don't really think you deserve those 5-star reviews that Rolling Stone used to give your horrible records, right? That's what I would want
to ask. That's a good one to lead into the fucking dinner. That would be good. Yeah.
It might kind of ruin.
Yeah, there would have been two bills coming to the table.
Yeah,
and that would have been a drag. She paid for everything.
Oh, that's sweet. That's cool.
So, well, I'd hope so. She's got fucking John's. She's got John's millions.
You could be a little more subtle. You could be like, Yoko, do you feel like there's any other 5-star reviewed Rolling Stone records that they play at Guantanamo Bay to try to get information out of the prisoners? Rick's like, I might run into Sean again, dude. I'm not doing this.
I don't think Sean's listening to this podcast.
I'm not sure I follow. But yeah, no, Sean, at the time I had this old Saturn car. And remember Saturn?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
anyway,
yeah. A different kind of car company making a different kind of car. My ass.
Yeah, a different kind of shitty.
Non-union Chevy, yes.
And so he was like, well, let's go do something. Let's go. And I said, he was like, where can we go get drinks and hang out and, you know, have some fun? I was like, I don't know. Lounge Jacks is kind of happening. Let's go there. Yeah. I said, well, okay, I can give you a ride if you want. So I have Sean Lennon in my car yapping. I don't know if he's on cocaine, but he's yapping and yapping and yapping, and he's got a...
Where was Yoko at this point?
What's that?
Where was Yoko at this point?
The back seat. No.
He was making out with Yoko in the back seat. All right, Rick. Yeah. Nice one.
No, I can't. I don't know if that ever happened. I can't verify that. But
listen to the digits all the time.
Yeah, and we went to fucking Lounge Jacks, and there's nobody there, but there's a band playing, and the place is pretty empty. And I walk in and go, you know, he's, I don't know, he's got some sort of ADHD shit going on. Where he's talking to mother, blah, blah, blah. And I walk in, and I say, who's playing tonight? And I look closer, and I start walking closer, and it's fucking Wayne Kramer.
There's nobody there.
And there's nobody there. Certainly, if I remember correctly, which I might not, because maybe I'm getting early onset Alzheimer's because I am old now. But I could walk straight up to the stage. I was standing at his feet, 3 feet away, watching him play amazing guitar, of course. So he was just like wailing. And it was like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on? All these like awesome even though Yoko Ono, I don't know, I don't look at her to like, oh, she's my rock and roll idol, her husband most definitely, sure. But it was the weirdest rock and roll night of my life. Certainly not Sean Lennon, but it was like, oh, John's kid and here then we got the MC5 guy and what the fuck is going on?
That is wild. What was he? Was he doing a solo thing or what was it?
Yeah. He was solo and just trying to promote a record that he had and going out on the road. And
I really respected him, man. I was sad to hear that he was dead last year, or early this year. He was good. His autobiography is a favorite of mine. But yeah, that is funny, the situations you find yourself in, right? Well, and it's funny because Sean Lennon actually remembers that day too. It's actually a day that will always live in his memory because it was the shittiest car that he ever rode in his entire life.
Indeed.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know why, but I remember the only thing I can associate with Chicago is driving in a Saturn car.
Exactly.
But, speaking
of Wayne Kramer, he probably has no idea who Wayne Kramer is. You know, I mean, you have to be of a certain age to really know who Wayne Kramer is, right?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I would imagine he's a pretty... He seems to be a big music file.
Is he? Oh, that's cool.
He's got like a... He's got some a legacy of rock and roll behind him.
Probably got a lot more time to listen to records than the rest of us, too.
But speaking of Wayne Kramer, this weird thing happened. I took my son out to Los Angeles, who's going out there to try to be a dancer and living out there now. And we stayed at this person's, a friend of ours, house, who lived next to this park. And I would drop him off at the dance place, and we'd come back, and I was getting him moved in and stuff like that. And I had walked to like a convenience store, and I was walking back across this field. And this person, they had this, you know, those oval tracks where there's like rubber and you walk around and people, they do track and field events on them.
Sure, sure.
Anyway, there was this guy, he's walking. I'm like, oh, you know, cause I cut through the park and I was like, what, Wayne Kramer? He's like, yeah. Do I know you? I said, yeah, I'm Rick Sims. I fucking, we did a show. I came on the stage with you and did that MC50 with you in Chicago. And I'm a big fan. He's like, oh yeah, walk with me. And we end up walking around. And this was like a year, maybe a year and a half ago. And he was sick. And we end up walking around that damn track like for an hour. And he told me his whole goddamn life story.
That MC50 thing was pretty cool, man. For those of us who were too young to ever see the MC5, I enjoyed that, actually. I saw it here in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, well, total rock. Have you ever seen his live stuff, his solo stuff? It was like, oh, there's something there that is like like Detroit rock, an understanding of music in a way that was the predecessor of punk rock that was not curated through like, oh, we want to be a band and be big. It was like, there was something very organic and very, I don't know.
It's fascinating. If you get a chance to read his biography, The Hard Stuff, I definitely recommend you do it. Talk about growing up in the 50s in Detroit when it was a safe kind of Midwestern city. But the other thing was the fact that he didn't really feel any kinship to punk rock at all. Like, he was trying to play they were trying to play like free jazz. And it wasn't until after he got out of prison and got older that he sort of embraced the punk rock thing, because he was able to kind of use it to make a career. Like, Brett Gurewitz from Epitaph Records grabbed him up and they made some solo records. But it's got an interesting story, man. He inspired a lot of music that he really didn't feel a kinship to. It's interesting.
I think they dragged him into it. They were like,
yeah, but he's
like it or not, you're an inspiration, dude. Anyway, here's my punk rock song. He's like, that's what the thing about it is I think he fancied himself a musician.
A real musician.
And sort of like maybe look down his nose at like, oh, what's this three chord punk rock shit?
Yeah. The other thing was he got clean, like old. Like, he was in his 60s. I mean, when he was doing those tours with Johnny Thunders and he was doing like that, he was a terrible junkie. Steen, Cheeling, well into his 50s, I know. So it's kind of an inspiration that you can get clean at any point.
Talking of those old days, obviously episode 17 with Rick was one of our big ones, but another one of our really good episodes was we interviewed a guy called Hiawatha Bailey. Do you know Hiawatha Bailey? Do you know that name?
No, but I was getting ready to make a joke about indigenous people again.
he was the only black member of the White Panther Party, so he was there at the same time as Wayne Kramer. He was in Detroit at the same time.
Political branch of the whole thing going on in Ann Arbor, Detroit in the late 60s, early 70s. Because they were radicals, man. They had guns. They had drugs. They were, you know, what was their logo? You know, fucking fighting the streets.
He was I didn't know how it was going to go. Tom got him on because he was a local Detroit thing, and I didn't know how that was going to go, being an older guy, you know? But it was actually one of the best episodes we've ever done. That guy was fucking crazy. The stories about the early days with, like, Kramer and
Tom, make it out with Iggy Pop.
Yeah, making out with Iggy Pop.
Stung down his throat or whatever it was. Yeah,
he went to prison with Wayne Kramer. I mean, episode 212. People should look that one up because that's a really good one.
Well, it's such like punk rock in a way, and it's like that was sort of our ethos, for better or worse. I might say worse. We are here to create chaos and fuck shit up for the sake of creating chaos and fucking shit up. We are here to turn shit upside down because fuck you and fuck all your stupid prejudices and ways that you think. Because no matter who you are, we probably hate you and you don't. You know, I don't.
I still live by that though, Rick. I still live by that one. Completely. Tom, if you're trying to talk, buddy, your camera's off and your microphone is off.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to be subtler, buddy.
Are you taking a shit? Sounds a bit echoey. Oh, okay, I know what he's doing. All right. So how the fuck did we get onto that? Okay, that's right. You were taking what's-his-face around. Little Sean Lennon.
Anyway, the hell his name you're right. I took you guys with me to the bathroom, but I turned the camera off and I turned the microphone off. You're welcome.
I just got very echoey there for a second.
We've had Rick for 2 hours now.
We have.
And I can tell he's got that glassed over look in his eye. So
no, that's how he always looks, to be honest.
Well,
yeah, I got stoned one too many times when I was...
Just stayed.
And it just sunk in, and now I'm just like stoned all the time.
I have a couple of other questions, if you don't mind.
Me too. So we'll go through them quick. We'll try not to ramble.
Do you ever go to shows anymore?
Do this goddamn podcast.
Do you go to any punk rock shows anymore? Do you ever go out?
The last one I went to was Electric Frankenstein.
Oh. Elias Club?
Yeah.
That was last year. Yeah,
it was recent. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I went there and the band, the Handcuffs, were open. It was just like such a weird kind of pairing. The Handcuffs was like the drummer from Screams and Elvis Brothers, Brad Stakely, who's a friend, you know, from Champagne.
Yeah, Brad Elvis, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, his band was there, and I liked his band, Screams, and he was in the Romantics, mm-hmm. and a little bit of funny story about that was that we had him come to, my kids were in a fine arts school, and they had a rock band in their school, and they were going to do What I Like About You. Hmm. And I was like, well, maybe we should have a drummer from the Romantics come in. Would that be a good thing? So he came in, and he was the drummer for the Romantics. And so it was like...
Dad got to have some cool points there.
Yeah, man. I'm like, hey, don't fuck with me, people. I am a rock and roll...
Your teenage kids are probably like, oh, my dad's playing a punk band. They're like, But once in a while, you can do something cool for them.
How old are the kids,
kids...
How old are they?
21.
Okay. Was it King Lab they went to?
Franklin Fine Arts Center.
Oh, wow. Listen to you. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
Fancy.
They went to that. And so anyway, that was the last show I went to. I'm trying to think if there's any other shows that I've gone to. I don't go to a lot of punk rock shows because I just don't hear about the fucking things. I wanted to go to Gang of Four at Space, but
no, you didn't.
but that was, I think it was sold out, or I can't remember. But
well, Space is so tiny.
I'm a lame ass motherfucker. I cannot get out. And
I don't know Space. Stuff. Is that real small? Because it was just Andy Gill, right? It was just the guitar player, and then he died.
Yeah, I mean it's tiny. Space is tiny. like 100 people, maybe. Yeah, go out to Stiff Little Fingers with us in June, man. Or May. I can't remember when it is. Either May or June.
Where is it at?
Metro.
Okay.
It's probably
that's a good place to see.
It's probably the last tour, I'd imagine.
That's what you're saying.
Probably are. This is our last tour.
Okay, there's that. And then, Rick, what was your question, buddy? I mean, Tom, what was your question?
Well, last time we talked to Rick, he and his brother were not particularly good terms, and I'm wondering, A, did making this record fix that, and is your label saying, we want you to try to play some shows to support this record? Has there been any pressure on you? Because I know a bass player who's available. I won't say what band he's from. Fellow Central Illinois guy. Might be able to help you out, but has that been even considered, or not? Or is that not on the table?
Well, first question, me and my brother, I mean, you know, he's my brother, so, you know, we've met and we talk and stuff, but when it comes to the band and all that stuff, I just can't, he's got some, I don't know, grievance, and we can never get around it, and
you're not playing with him no matter what. And Doug's gone.
Well, I don't think, you know, when we did the show in 2006, that was like, oh my God, we have to, especially him, because he's a drummer and has to do all this fucking fast drumming. I mean, it's a sporting event for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does start to catch up with his drummer more than.
Yeah. He had to train for a marathon. And now it's like, what, 20 years later? I can't imagine.
Yeah.
And he hasn't called up and said, look, we'll do some shows. And he lives in Kentucky and trying to get together with him and trying to get that shit together and do a show. Oh, God. I can't, and besides Doug's passed away, we did play a few songs. Me and my brother played a few songs at Doug's memorial. So that was interesting and touching and weird. We haven't really, as far as playing live goes, I just thought, I put this Facebook post the other day. I was like, I'm at the time of my life where I think I need to start touring as the only original member of my band. And it was supposed to be a joke.
That's all the old punk bands now, Rick. You'd be in good company.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just like, well, that's not really the band, is it? That isn't really the band. That's the sort of some sort of facsimile of the band.
That's never stopped anybody, buddy.
Yeah. Well, the thing with the Digits is they never got to that level. You know, they had a level of success, but they never got quite to that level where he could, you know, do the oldies tour and be playing the Des Plaines Theater and that type of thing. You know what I mean?
With the Michael Schenker group, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, yeah. The other thing about it, is, we were talking about it earlier, is like, hey, you bring your, the Boris and the Sprinkler always had to show up and do good because they knew the Digits were bringing their A game. We got to bring an A game. Otherwise, who wants to go see?
You don't want to go out like sort of limp out.
The B game Digits. Hey, let's go see the B game Digits. Yeah. And
well, the key of that is you surround yourself with young guys that can kind of prop your old ass up. That's how those other guys all do it, right? I mean, go see the Dickies. It's Leonard and the guitar player and a bunch of kids.
Stan, yeah, a bunch of kids.
Stan and Leonard.
And who wants to see that? But I think. If I did it, it would have to be. don't kid yourself, Neil. It is not the Dickies.
But it kind of is because it's standard.
Some dude in the Dickies that used to be.
Yeah, but
Dickies.
It's
the main guy. It's the main guy.
It's nostalgia.
So you'd be the main guy from the Digits. So it would still kind of work. Exactly. It's not like it's the drummer. It's not like it's Brad by himself. That wouldn't work.
You get yourself a couple of new shark skins. Get yourself some new shark skin suits and some sunglasses, and you'd be good to
cut
go.
Cut that hair, goddammit. You'll be fine.
There is only one way, and I was telling Heidi about this, my wife, who, anyway, I was like, there is one way I would do a Digits reunion, and that is if my daughter played the bass.
There you go. That
would work. And the drummer from the Soy City Stranglers played the drums, because he is the son of my cousin. And I thought, well, that might be kind of interesting. And then family. You can kind of like, you can justify that as sort of
a spiritual
thing. Yeah, you're not getting too caught up in like, oh, this is the recreation of the Digits. But it's also this like, you know, you're not going to replace Doug.
No.
You can, but I don't know. You're just not going to, you're going to get Digits beat game.
Digits B game. There you go. Better than most bands' A game, I bet. Yes.
Nobody wants that. Everybody has their own memory of it. I'll always remember Rick for mercilessly smashing the beer bottle over the guy's head at the double door. That's what I'll always remember him for.
That's what he fucking gets, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Don't come on stage. Don't get on fucking stage. That's with the band. That's all I gotta say. I think that's it. I mean, okay, so you played Farm Aid with Willie Nelson. Is that true?
Yes, we played a show. That's when I was in the Super Suckers. We went to Louisville to play Farm Aid, and he came up and did a, what was that called? Fucking song Bloody Mary Morning, something like that, with us. I can't remember because I was never a big Willie Nelson fan. The Bloody Mary Morning, and then we played the punk rock version.
I don't think I know that one.
We went on his bus, and he smoked pounds and pounds of dope. unfortunately, at the time, I was sober, and I still am. But so I didn't actually smoke dope with Willie Nelson, but I was.
But you inhaled his dope.
Exactly. Yes. That counts.
He's still high.
Watched him on his bus. Speaking, he's like one of the coolest people you ever meet. The Ramones, biggest fucking assholes I've ever met in my life.
I remember you telling us that last time. Break my heart, man. Willie Nelson, 90 years old. Still out there doing it.
Yoko Ono, 91 years old.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Shit. She never really did it, though, Neil. Willie Nelson's out there doing it.
She did it with Rick Sims in the back of the Saturn, I heard.
That's right.
I'm married, so I don't, you know, we need to keep that under wraps.
Well, that was a long time ago.
I mean, I'm pretty sure you can get a hall pass for Yoko Ono.
Yeah, it doesn't even really count.
Probably Liza Minnelli, too.
Yoko, do you mind if I have sex with you?
that bait paying or whatever that young
what the hell are you saying?
Remember for a while
this canceled
John again. Lennon had that other Asian girlfriend because Yoko was so tired of him she like gave him her like Handmaiden or something. You don't remember that?
Oh, yeah. I saw a picture of that. It was like...
It was a different Asian.
The thing is, John Lennon couldn't tell the difference.
She basically was like, John is so exhausting. Like, he's such an exhausting guy. Like, she had to, like, pass him off on this other Asian chick. Do you think that he didn't know the difference, Neil? Is that what you're saying?
That's
that
he couldn't tell the difference between he didn't know.
You heard it here first, folks. John Lennon thought all these women looked the same.
True. It's something like she said, you go fuck this other Asian chick now for a while and get away from me.
She's like, I'm sick of making you food. Let this other woman do it.
Fix some food, bitch. That's where we came exactly, in. Right there. Exactly. Yes.
So listen, 420 record store day is 420 this year. And if you want this Digis thing, as I do, I'll probably make a couple phone calls. Reach out to some friends and see what I can do.
Made mad but over here.
Only 1,100 copies of this thing, at least the first press on the green. So you're going to have to get your ass out of bed on record store day, and you're going to have to go down and get it. If you're in Chicago area, you definitely might as well go have Rick sign it for you.
Yeah, what time are you going to be down there, Ricky?
1 p.m. It's at 1? Yeah.
It's at Wicker Park. That's not the one we go to, right, Neil?
Yeah, it is. On Milwaukee.
Is that the sugar? That's the sugar we go to, is Wicker Park? Okay.
Yep.
Where they play the pretentious ambient music.
Yes.
Oh, it's awful. See? Oh, my gosh.
Told you.
It's like, boy, I really like this song. It sounds like someone dropped a box of silverware down the stairs.
Yes.
Punk rock, man.
It ain't punk rock. Not I don't know exactly.
Updated punk rock.
But I did find a Necros bootleg single in there, Neil.
That's true.
Or you found it, I think.
I found it for you, yeah.
But anyway, and then after that, you're driving up to Green Bay. So what time are you going to be in Green Bay then? Later in the afternoon?
Midnight. That's like 6 o'clock or something like that, yeah.
And go there. Like
my hand's
cool
going to be all sore, but luckily, my wrist is. Yeah.
you hope it'll be sore. You hope it'll be sore because that's better than the alternative. You all of a sudden your spinal tap, and there's like people are looking at you, pityingly looking at you while you sit.
It won't happen in Green Bay for some reason. I think there's a lot of hullabaloo around the record signing in Green Bay.
Are you
Bay.
Saying that there's not that much to do in Green Bay?
maybe.
As opposed to Chicago, where you can do lots of things, such as be homeless or do drugs and wander around on the streets.
Yeah.
Wow.
And fucking in the streets.
Hard-hitting political comment from the Punk Till I Die podcast.
Last time I was in Chicago, I was not overly impressed by the human control down there.
Damn. But
that's right.
Yeah. It's a tough world, man.
I don't have a solution.
We gotta make it out if we can make it.
Exactly. And I feel bad for people, and I don't have a solution, but man, it's pretty rough down there. All right. I don't want to end things on a bummer note, Neil. That was my fault.
Yeah.
No, say something funny, Neil.
Now this podcast sucks.
Yes, we're
thanks so much. Thanks so much, Rick.
We're going to play out.
Form a line on the left for your free drinks.
We're going to play out with Laura's pick, Under the Christmas Fish.
What's the deal with this song? Tell me about this song.
Yeah. I know what it's about, but...
It was this place in Champaign where we used to go called George Chin's. I think it was Chin's. House of Chin.
Yeah, something like that.
Where you would go and buy these big volcano drinks, and they'd light the tops on fire. It was like just a place where all the underage kids, college kids, would drink. And on the wall, he just had a big stuffed Marlin. And he had Christmas lights on it. And we would sit under that fish and we would suck on these volcano things. But other than that, it has no relationship whatsoever. It's just some abstract song about some bullshit I came up with.
So it's not a holiday song per se.
I play it every Christmas, it's my Christmas song. Yeah.
If you're a Digis fan, it's quite the holiday song.
Did this one make the hit side of the record? Well, maybe I'll listen to it next year, Neil.
Assuming
I'm one of the lucky 1,100.
It says it comes with all kinds of memorabilia or something. What is the deal with that? What kind of stuff is in there in the packaging?
A bunch of pictures of old posters of really old stuff, like the Digits before they were the good Digits. Pictures in there and. Stuff from the Chicken Shed, stuff from, posters from the Champagne days, and
I think I've got one flyer. You're playing with the Shakes, I believe.
One in 100 copies come with a Yoko Ono pubic hair, actually. Fuck that's me. That's the very rare version.
Yeah, well, I think there's a... speaking of that, I think there's probably a picture of the sperm samples we sent out as promos.
Did you guys actually do that? That's funny.
Yeah. We made sperm samples, and we put three sperm samples in a thing that you... and put like a red cross on the outside of it, because so it looked really medical. And when back in the day, when you would like send promo copies out to record stations, radio stations,
gotcha.
They would get a promo copy, and they'd always get like a little treat that you would give them, and we sent out sperm samples for.
Boy, somewhere someone still has that. It's the most.
I have one in the basement, and all the sperm is turned yellow, so it's a little.
It's probably not viable.
Good anymore. Lord. Well, yeah, that's a good story to go out on. Thanks for that, everybody.
But yes, no,
this is the worst podcast ever. Fuck, this sucks.
Catch Rick on Record Store Day.
Yes.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Maybe. Come down, I'll regale you with some yarns.
He'll give you a sperm sample, if you're lucky.
That's going to be a very rare customer that's going to get a coax a sperm sample out of it. But you can't promise that to anybody. Just anybody. Yeah,
my right hand will be way too busy, but maybe I'll do something on site for you.
Well, my friend, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it. And hopefully I'll see you on the 20th.
Looking forward to hearing this record, Rick. I really am. I didn't really know you at all when we talked to you a couple years ago, but I've been listening pretty regularly since then. So I'm looking forward to finally getting some vinyl digits in my collection.
Yeah, man. Now you don't have to wade through all those B tracks. You just have that side of.
I don't know. Sounds like that second record is all B tracks, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that second record is just kooky. It's like. Good luck.
So basically, I'm going to play the second record like every fifth time I play the first record.
That's good. I think that's good.
That's right.
I'm down with that ratio.
There you go.
Well, thank you for giving. It's funny. The last time you came on, it was 2 hours and 5 minutes, and here again, it's coming on for 2 hours and 5 minutes. So I didn't think you'd stick with us for that long, but I appreciate it.
Are you sure we're not over that?
2 hours. It says 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 48 seconds, my friend.
Wow.
Yeah.
A new record.
And good luck whoever's editing your goddamn podcast.
There's no editing, man. This goes raw, dog, baby. It'll be 2.5 hours by the time we put the music in it.
Yep. People love it.
It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
Oh, Heidi just came in the room, too, I think.
She's looking at you going, what are you doing, dude?
Stop. Yeah, she's like, I hate the digits now.
So you telling that Yoko Ono story again?
Yeah. Oh, don't say that. Oh, Yoko on a story again.
Listen. Yeah. Thanks, Rick. I wish I could be. I am not going to make it to Chicago on Record Store Day, unfortunately. But man, I hope I can. We run into each other one of these days.
Fuck, cool, man. I fucking live in the same town as him, and I haven't run into him. God damn it.
Well, it's because all you do is drink beer, and all that he does is drink tea. You guys need to find somewhere where you get some good artisanal water or something and sit down.
Well, yes. The Irish pub was shut down during COVID, so
yeah,
like it closed for good. But they're opening again up on Central, so this summer.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah,
yeah. It's funny. So it's officially like 4 years now. You guys are trying to get together to meet up in person. So
I don't think we're trying.
This is the year. So, Neil, I take that as he's not recruiting you to play in the Reformed Digits. But, hope reigns eternal. We'll see what happens.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting angle. McWilson bass player.
That's what I'm saying. He's about the same. Dude, he's vintage. He's from that era.
We can get Don Gerard to play drums. It's a whole thing.
Rick, see? he's what we call period appropriate. Neil is appropriate.
Oh shit! My now I do have to go because I just heard the do 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 do. My earbuds are dying. So
all right, listen. Thanks for hanging out with us, man.
Yep. Cheers.
All right.
Yep.
Later on.
See you again. See ya. All right, everybody. See thanks ya. For listening, everybody. Thanks for sticking it through. Keep a little mark in your heart. Stay free.
Smell you later.
Smell you later, everybody. Bye bye.
Okay, that brings us to the end of another show. Hope you enjoyed it. Remember, keep a little mark in your heart, and we'll be back the same mark time, same mark channel.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Ah, ha, ha. If I get the feeling you've been cheated, good night.
What a fucking rotter.
What a load of old shit.
Thank you, fuck you, bye, boom.
Okay.
This is Rock and Roll Radio. Stay tuned for more rock and roll.